Sunward Sky, Episode 1.1, Delays. The waiting room looked like something out of a history lesson. Or it would have, had the whole area not been cannibalized and refit to within an inch of its life. There was a kiosk in the corner, a private area where the employees of the place had once stood and taken in physical cash. Small pieces of metal and paper that represented the worth of the goods that customers had selected. The fact that humans were once trusted in this process of exchange was utterly archaic. The registers and computer consoles had long been ripped out, along with anything that would have represented a seat for the unhappy employees. For a while, self-service modules had stood, screens facing the opposite way to the computers the employees would have used. Prospective clients and customers had been able to hard-code entry details and pay with small rectangular pieces of plastic. This had been the status quo for payment methods for some years in the late 20th and early 21st centuries, before synth chips. After a time, the screens had been torn out and the chipboard bench was all that remained of a once human service desk, cracked and swollen from the constant change in humidity. There were a series of cables that ended in unusual plugs wrapped in decaying plastic. Even the exposed copper wiring was tarnished, a dusty green pall developing on the countertop. Alyssa didn't know about the historicity of the building, and wouldn't have cared about it if she had. The dust on the floor shifted slightly as she cracked the door open, wandering through rather aimlessly to pass the time. The announcement had come about 15 minutes beforehand.
An unscheduled delay has occurred on the outbound flight of the Sunward Sky. Please remain in the terminal until we are ready for you to board.
She'd immediately stood up from where she'd been charging her hand tablet against the wall and walked out of the endless gunmetal grey corridor that overlooked the launch crater. It was bad enough that she found herself stuck in this mess anyway. She didn't want to just sit around and wait until they could ship her off. A few of the corridors she'd found had borne staff-only signs in both Anglo and Mando glyphs. But she figured that if they weren't locked, it was someone else's problem. She'd found this corridor with her nose. It smelled the mustiest and the most disused. No surprise, she thought. The concrete floor was cracked and had settled on one side almost the height of a step on a conventional stairwell. The faded signs above the old kiosk had only old Anglo instructions on them, which she couldn't read. There had been something bolted to the floor. Several somethings. And there were old pictures of desert landscapes and well-fed individuals pointing at their features. This place must be older than the launch crater, she found herself thinking. They must have been visitors paying for the right to roam the landscape before the sun got too hot for here. The dust on the floor had a uniformity that she liked. The place was obviously abandoned. She could easily recognize the places where she'd walked and where she'd opened the door. She knelt down and ran a finger across the concrete. It came away filthy. Why even build a canopy out here? She thought. The place, a gathering place for visitors to the area, she guessed, was too old to be useful for helping with the running of the launch pad, and it served no purpose that she could think of from a staff or crewing perspective. It was just a dilapidated shack from an out-of-date time. It seemed so wrong. The door behind her snapped open, and a man walked in, reeling a little as he spotted her. She froze. She knew she wasn't supposed to be in here, but running would get her in more trouble than it was worth. He asked why she was in the room. He spoke with a nervous authority, and she saw through it at once. I'm looking around. Same as you, old man. He wasn't that old, but the insult seemed to hit home. His skin was creased into what would have been smile lines if his face wasn't currently wearing an impassive frown. And there were more flecks of grey in his hair than remained of the original black. He stomped towards her. He was much taller than she was, towering over her 160cm body, and was at least twice as wide. Despite this, he walked with a lilt, a list to one side that pronounced itself as he tried to bring himself to a halt. "Aye," he said, and the slight trace of an old Scottish brogue crept through. "I'm having a look. Never had time to see the rest of the launch village before," he said. And when he grinned, Alyssa relaxed. This man wasn't going to report her to anyone. His boots and shirt clanked with tungsten carabiners. and he wore a tool belt full of unlikely-looking instruments. "You're a mechanic," she said, "for the spaceship." His laugh was gruff and gave way to a small fit of coughs before he was able to answer. "Such as it is. Not so much for the spaceship as any spaceship. Sunward Sky have been in rotation for a lot of years, and so have I. This will be my fourth tour on her. If we get off the ground, that is." As he said it, he thumped feebly on the floor with one boot. It clanked as he did so. "Name's Healy," he said, offering a hand so pale it was almost see-through. Alyssa felt, more than saw, the delicacy of the veins within it. "Alyssa," she said. "So you've never seen the other buildings in the town? It seems like half of it's locked off. Well, closed off. Locking it would have helped us not end up here." She kicked at the floor, sending up a puff of dust. "Aye, I haven't. Don't spend a lot of time dirtside these days, if I'm honest. Makes me a little woozy with all the G." He motioned to the slight twitching in his stance, the result of motor coordination that was too used to low and null gravity environments. "Last time I spent any appreciable amount of time on the rock was when we still launched out of Canaveral. I thought I could use some exercise, though. They only spin the ring on the Sunward Sky up to about a quarter G." Alyssa regarded him. The man must have been at least 50 then. Cape Canaveral, once the home of almost all space launches since before the Apollo program in the 1960s, had been destroyed by a Category 7 hurricane some 15 years ago. What wasn't washed into the sea was now far too unstable for rocket launches. Healy had been doing the rounds for a very long time. "This is my first time," she said, and he nodded before she continued. "I'm nervous, but I think I'm ready." He sighed. "You're never ready. Your first flight will be nothing you've ever experienced before, and not always in a good way." Up until now, he'd been eyeing the old room in a lackadaisical fashion, eyes darting back and forward as he read the Anglo signs. He can read Anglo, Alyssa thought as she tucked that into her memory. Mando was much as official language for these days as Anglo was, but being able to read both was a fairly rare skill. He twitched as he carefully redirected his eyes back onto Alyssa, looking her up and down. The carabiners clinked softly and slightly out of time with his movement. "Tell me something," he said, and the lightness and jocularity was gone from his demeanor as fast as it had arrived when he'd introduced himself. "Why are you going up?" "What do you mean?" Alyssa replied, but she knew what he meant. "People, they don't just go to space. This isn't a job people volunteer for." He pointed at his translucently pale hand and nodded at the twitching. "It affects you in ways you don't even imagine. Sure, the view is incredible, but it messes with your mind. You're in that tin can. Void around you. Your muscles deteriorate. Your coordination goes. You have to shit in a bag. You're constantly one angular miscalculation from burning up in the atmosphere or being flung into the depths of space." He was somber now. In place of his joviality, there was a haunted look, and Alyssa found herself thinking that the man must have been closer to 100 than he was to 50. His eyes spoke of eons of loneliness, horrors, and of a lifetime of terrified silence. Without willing it, she felt the urge to cry. I always thought space would be amazing to see," she lied, and managed to tear herself away from the stare. Healy composed himself, and the grin came back to his face as wholeheartedly as though it had never left. "I see. Well, there's something to be said for being in the sky, to be sure. And the grav hurts less in the sky after a while." With that, he seemed satisfied, and his eyes started roaming around the room again. "Great spot, this. Old tourist terminal. You know, before the crater, there was a big old lake here. People would come from miles around to see it. They'd sit in here, then get in automobiles and drive out just to look at it. They didn't have to work there or anything. I never experienced it, but I'd sure miss the old idea of those days." With that, he turned and walked back towards the door he'd come in. "I'm sorry. My legs are not what they once were. I tire so quickly on these earth walks. Lovely to meet you, Alyssa. I shall see you aboard the sky." Alyssa watched him leave, thinking what a powerful man he'd have been if had he not spent the best part of his adult life in space. He was easily 2 meters tall, and even without the musculature of someone who had spent their life on the surface, he had the broad shoulders and long limbs of a potential athlete. The tourist station was again deserted, and the dust towards the floor was now a clumped mess after she and Healy had walked into it. She considered following briefly, but thought better of it. He was probably going to find a bunk somewhere to lay in to ease his bones. She therefore turned and wandered through the undisturbed dust, small puffs jumping up at her feet and leaving a trail for her to go back by. The delay was taking some time, and she checked her hand tablet to make sure no indication of departure was available on it. Happy that she wasn't going to miss her flight, she ambled to the other side of the room and cracked the door. It too was unlocked, despite Anglo and Mando signs warning of reprisals for those who would ignore them. This time, Alyssa looked more closely and realized that the signs themselves were a long way out of use, peeling and corrupt at the edges with bubbling paint and scratches all over. These areas were not private for staff, they were merely abandoned. Healy was right. She didn't want to be going on this flight. Spaceflight had fallen from grace in humanity's collective mind's eye in the preceding years. Despite the advances in spaceflight safety and technology, and despite the worsening conditions on the surface of the Earth, spaceflight was still a dangerous and risky profession that would result in people being unfit to live on the surface of their own world after a fairly short period of time. People like Healy were quite rare in reality. Most of the time, musculoskeletal and cardiovascular problems killed people long before old age ever did. Any medication that was provided to astronauts seemed to be nothing more than a crapshoot. Sometimes it improves people's lives, otherwise it shortened them far too much. It seemed as though space was just too inhospitable for humans to endure for any length of time. But there was demand for space travel all the time. Global interconnected satellite networks that ran everything from GPS to the latest generation of vidmeme content creators needed constant maintenance. It had also been declared unconstitutional for governmental bodies to send prisoners into what amounted to a death trap. So for the most part, astronauts were now volunteers, people down on their luck needing an immediate income and a way to survive, and not thinking about long-term consequences. "Why are you going up?" Healy had asked her. She wasn't prepared to really answer that herself yet, much less answer it to a perfect stranger, regardless of how hollow his eyes and cheekbones were. Circumstances weren't ideal, but she couldn't let herself be brought low by the idea that what she was doing was something of a last step for people with nothing else. "Even if that's true," she thought, pulling open the door at the end of the corridor and finding herself in another antique, dust-covered room. This one wasn't undisturbed. A sleek, clear line in the cracked linoleum floor suggested that something had been dragged from the door on the left to another door on the right. A set of boot prints on either side of the line were spaced more closely than usual. Whatever had been dragged was heavy. This was further evidenced by a series of new scratches on the door on the external tunnel. It must have crashed in the edges as the door swung closed. She crept up to the doors, noting the cracks and scratches in the broken linoleum as she did. She felt her heartbeat quicken in her chest, and it grew louder as she walked closer to the door. She felt certain that anyone standing on the other side would hear the thump, thump emanating from her ribcage, and they'd have her made. When she got to the door, she saw that there was a slight slit, and it was still open. Through the slit, she saw what looked as though it was a mechanic shop. The space wasn't quite big enough for the transport pods or goods trains that she was accustomed to, and the majority of the workshop looked too old and dilapidated to be of much use with modern machinery. Rubber tires in the corner were degrading slowly, revealing steel radio belts that hadn't been used since the mid-21st century. Near empty shelves were all around the place, covered in similar amounts of dust. She saw the dragline snake her way over to a corner of the floor where a packing crate stood. The crate was only slightly shorter than she was, but quite a bit wider, and possibly about 4 meters long. It was black, with aluminium edges that were worn down on one side. Behind it, she could see the top of a pair of heads, presumably the ones who'd moved the crate. She quelled her breath as she noticed they were talking. "It's the only one this time?" one of them said. A short mess of crop blonde hair bobbed as it spoke. "Reckon," confirmed an Australian inflection, the undercurrent of boredom surging through the syllables. "The governor ever tell what was in him?" the blonde hair said. The clipped voice seemed stuck in an age long past. It was unusual to hear such a strong accent that would identify someone as from a particular region. Healy's brogue dropped in and out, for example. Alyssa still had a Canadian affectation occasionally, but they were mainly products of the multiculturalism that was necessary for a productive society these days. Not this one, though. Blonde hair sounded as though he'd never set foot outside London's East End despite being an American spaceport. It doesn't matter what's in them. This is the last shipment. Last time we're going to be doing anything with the Sunward Sky. There was a shifting sound as one of them scuffled their feet towards the other end of the black and silver box. Good thing, too. It's been a right pain in the ass trying to make the replacements make weight. The Londoner chuckled. Alyssa sneaked a glance and saw he was wearing some sort of helmet or headgear. He was kneeling at the short side of the box. Yeah, but we made him make weight, didn't we? Bit bloody silly, really. I think they'd be more careful. Blonde hair bobbed and started moving towards the opposite end of the Londoner. Within a couple of seconds, he'd be at a vantage point where he'd see Alyssa if he cared to look. Well, that's worked out in our favour now, hasn't it? He leaned down, as he reached the end looking for something on the face of the box that was directly in Alyssa's view. Wait, Brett, did you replace the... What was that? Unable to contain her anxiety at the thought of being seen any longer, Alyssa had shot from behind the door to the opposite side of its architrave, and the sharp movement had caught the eye of the one with the blonde hair. There's someone over there, he said. Brett, here, grab that spanner. The two of them went to the toolbox they'd left next to the packing crate and picked up a pair of bolt cutters and a 40-centimeter steel spanner. They stalked towards the door that Alyssa had been hiding behind, with a "Who's there?" growling from the Londoner, Brett's throat. They could hear a scuffling coming from the other room and moved faster. After only a few seconds, they yanked the door open and swept through it, brandishing their improvised weapons at the spaces on either side. Nobody was there. Methodically, they walked their way through the room, checking behind every shelf that had been left bare by whichever owners had last abandoned the workshop. Satisfied that the place was uninhabited, they slipped into the tunnel that connected it to the next building, moving loudly and brashly as two thugs are wont to do when presented with a threat. Brett held his shoulders low and pulled a glass shield down over his face from his helmet, while the blonde-haired Australian let the bolt cutters hang loosely from his right arm. The veins popping out of his forearm spoke of a long career of hard labour, and he caught himself just before he got to the door in the next room. He nodded at Brett, and they sprang through the door, out of the corridor, and into an old tourism waiting room. The place was as deserted as it had ever been, with white-hot sunlight slashing in through the windows onto an endless expanse that had once held the seating of potential travellers and adventurers. The two men glanced at each other and stepped into the room to begin another thorough search, when a voice came over the PA speaker, filtering down into the abandoned lobby where they stood.
Crew and passengers aboard the Sunward Sky, we apologise for the delay. The ship is now ready to commence boarding. Please make your way to the departure terminal and board the shuttle train at your earliest convenience. Thank you.
With that, the two men turned and walked back out the way they'd come. If they'd stayed for a few more seconds, they may have seen the small trail of boot prints in the dust. They let out of the door. A confused flurry of prints 10 meters into the room show where she'd confused and out of time. On the kiosk, the cords that had lain undisturbed for years were shifted, and a clear line had been drawn through the dust on the countertop. Behind it, Alyssa sat sweating, with one hand over her mouth to stop her breathing from being heard. She waited for a few minutes, to ensure Brett and the blonde Australian had left the room. Only when the second call from the PA filtered down from the terminal did she slide out from under the desk. She patted herself down carefully and walked with deliberate calm back to the terminal and checked into the shuttle train to board her first ever space flight aboard the Sunward Sky. Thanks for tuning in. My name's Henry Nielsen, author and producer of Sunward Sky. If you want to get in contact, you can follow me on Twitter or Reddit by the handle Hunting Sunrise or on Instagram at Hunting_Sunrise. If you like this story, consider picking up my ebook novella Eleanor's Mind, available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Again, thank you very much, and I hope you tune in again next time.